Welcome back to Trek Exploration. I'm Albie.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about Season 5, Episode 3 of Discovery, Janal.
Isn't that the board game where you get caught in the jungle?
That's Jumanji.
That was the last episode of Discovery.
The last episode was Jumanji. See, that would have been cool if they did Jumanji for that episode. I might have liked it better. I don't know. I didn't like the last episode. I think we're going to be surprised and see if I like this episode better, maybe. I don't know.
It's too bad that we didn't come up with the Jumanji connection when we were doing that episode. But it's also too bad that Culber wasn't in that episode really on the planet, because then we could have called it Humanji. It took me a while, but I got there.
We got there. So in case you haven't realized, we're talking about the episode Janal. And Chris, can you give me the synopsis for the episode we're talking about today?
I would love to. This is Star Trek Discovery, Season 5, Episode 3, Janal. The hunt for the progenitor technology leads the crew of Discovery to Trill, where a Gian Tara ritual allows Culber to host the memory of 800-year-old Trill host Janal Bix, who leads Michael and Book on a deadly mission to recover the next progenitor artifact. The trip to Trill also means an uncertain reunion between Adira and Gray, and Saru is having relationship problems of his own as he attempts to navigate his private and public life as Tarina's betrothed. Also, Commander Raynor is a jerk until he doesn't like him. This time on Discovery.
So Janal. I think you wrote that one. You write that one?
Yes, I did write that one.
I like that one. That's better than the TV Guide one. Okay, yeah. This aired April 11th, 2024. The director was Andy Armaganian.
Armaganian.
And the writers were Kyle Jarrow and Lauren Wilkinson.
And it might be Yarrow.
Yarrow. Yeah, maybe. I think you're right. Kyle Jarrow. We'll go with that.
Okay. And Kyle, either way, Kyle.
I don't know. So let's do first impressions, and then we'll go to our, we'll go to say hi to everybody and tell them where they can find us. But let's do our first impressions. How's that sound? I'm liking that.
Okay.
So Christopher DeFilippis, first impressions of Discovery, Season 5, Episode 3, Janal.
I liked it. Yeah. And I liked it.
Cool.
But I don't know that it was any better than last week's episode, which we didn't like that much at all. So I think it was good for different reasons.
Okay.
But there were elements of this one that I found just as tedious as the last episode. So we'll get into all that. But on the whole, you know, had a good time watching it. How about you?
I liked this episode. Judging it against other episodes of Disco, I enjoyed it more. So I think the way I can probably communicate it was that contained in this episode, I think they accidentally made an episode of Star Trek. And that's the part of the episode I enjoyed.
Okay. I look forward to hearing which episode of Star Trek they made. Well, was it a remake or was it an original episode?
Original episode of Star Trek, but it was an episode of Star Trek, I think. Okay. There were still the 20 minutes before and after that were not really. but I think the main meat of the episode, I think, was accidentally an episode of Star Trek. Or what I think of an episode of Star Trek.
For you to find a nugget of Star Trek in Disco is a grand day indeed. Everybody sound the horns, wave your flags, drop the confetti from the sky, because
I was surprised. I was like, I'm enjoying this. And I'm sure we'll get into it later, but I think a lot of it has to do with Wilson Cruz, his performance in this, and of course, returning to Trill. So those are things I really enjoyed, and we'll talk more about that. Chris, can you say hi to our crew and let everybody know about our crew and how they can become part of our crew?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can always become part of our crew by subscribing, liking, and, you know, going to patreon.com/trexploration. There you'll find our Trexplorer, our community of Trexplorers. You can also follow us on YouTube at youtube.com/trexploration. You can find us on Insta at trexploration pod. You can find us on X at trexploration. You can always email us at trexplorationpod@gmail.com. So once again, no new patrons to report this time, but always, as always, continued thanks to our current supporters. We have our $5 cadet, Scott Seligman. We have our 17.01 Lieutenant Commanders, Cosplay Dad, One of All, and Fantasy Fan. Thank you all. And of course, we have our $47 a month member, Captain Charles from Texas. Thank you, Charles, and Fantasy Fan, and One for All, and Cosplay Dad, and Scott. All of your support means all of the world to us. I mean, you kept us alive long enough for Albie to find a nugget of Trek in disco. So well done. Well done, all of you. Can you see me clapping? I got to get that on camera. Okay.
Thank you, crew. Thank you so much, crew. Thank you, Captain Charles from Texas. Thank you, Fantasy Fan. Thank you, Cosplay Dad. Thank you, One of All. Thank you, everyone. That is going to help us out moving forward with this show. I mean, I don't know if you can tell, but my camera resolution might have gone up a little bit. So
you look good, things happening.
Thank you. Yeah. Making additions to the space station, making, you know, upgrading equipment. We're getting ready to do this. We're going all in.
I got the good Pellegrino. It's the lemony kind. So I'm really stepping it up here.
I have the peach zero sugar Snapple.
Sounds terrible.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. Peach tea. It reminds me of the peach tea mints that they used to have in the little hockey puck, but they don't make them anymore.
Yeah, what you said, that thing.
I used to eat those like candy. I love peach tea for some
reason. Gotcha. Peach tea is delicious.
Yeah.
So we got a little bit of feedback. If you want to go through that. Yeah. This. Well, you put a poll up on the Patreon site. And you had asked people how they would rate Under the Twin Moons. Now, if you recall, you and I rated it at, I think I was at 2.5, and that was the high rating.
I went with 2.
You went down to, did you go down 2. To 2?
I didn't want to go 2. Under 2 because I thought that would be disrespectful for everyone working so hard.
Well, we were in the minority because according to our pollsters over on Patreon site. Yes, thank you. 67% rated the episode 4 stars out of 5 or 4 whatever you want out of 5. And 33% rated it as higher than 5 Whoa. Out of 5. I don't know who these insane people are, but...
Hopefully, I find in disco what they found in disco.
Yeah.
That's my hope one day.
Find in disco. It's not dead yet.
Disco's not dead. It's we did a get comeback. We have one final season.
Yep, that's it. We got some more feedback, too. Just a small note, again, from our Captain Charles from Texas.
Charles?
Eventually, we'll get more feedback than from Charles. So
yes,
we don't
but
want
thank
to make
you, Charles. Keep it coming. Show.
Yes, please. But Charles, he raises another good point. He, along with the poll, he wrote, I still want to know where the heck are the Klingons? Did I miss a one-off comment from Admiral Vance? They have, what, 9 more episodes to give us some kind of hint? Have we heard about the Klingons? Or did they just, you know what they said? There was nothing more reviled in Discovery Season 1 than what they did to the Klingons. So,
in all of Star Trek, really. Almost.
Have they been burned a little too many times? Like, they just don't want to acknowledge Klingons in this.
My headcanon is that virus, that retrovirus that turned them human, but in brown face for a while. Uh-huh. And then turned them into whatever Discovery abomination of Klingons were. That virus finally did away with all of the Klingons.
So you think the augment virus? So we have Dr. Soong to thank for Klingon genocide.
Yes, and any Klingons thinking. That survived, it was because they merged with human DNA. So we have descendants of Alexander, because Alexander was 1/4 human, and of course we have B'Elanna's child that was. 1/4 human as
one
well,
quarter,
or 3/4
one human. 1/4 Klingon.
1/4 Klingon, yeah. So the only Klingons left in the, what is it, 78th century that we're in now?
The 156th century, yes. Yes.
Are only those Klingons. So that's my thought.
All right. Well, I mean, I like that you have like a whole retcon headcanon for this. For me, it's just like, which Klingons do they show? They don't know. they don't want to go back to the Klingons that they established as the Disco Klingons, because everybody hates the Disco Klingons, but they don't want to go back to the Next Gen style Klingons, or I guess now the Picard era Klingons, if we're going to call it that, because it's so wholly different. So do you think it's almost like when the crew of DS9 visited the K9 space station, K7 rather, K9, listen mm-hmm. to me, Wolf Wolf. That's space, and yeah, everybody was with Sarah Jane. Everybody was looking around saying, these are Klingons? Where? And Worf is like, we don't speak of it. I feel like if Michael saw a Picard era Klingon, she'd be like, these are Klingons? Where?
So, I don't care what kind of Klingon they give us, as long as it's played by J.G. Hertzler. That's all I'm saying.
J.G. would be nice to have. I mean, yeah. House of Martok still going strong.
We get his voice on Lower Decks here and there, so that's good. Oh, remind me to show you my Trek and Tell later. I do have one or more, so that's interesting. Okay, I guess, thank you for the feedback, everyone. Charles from Texas, and thank you for all our crew members sticking with us. Really appreciate it. I think it's time to get into the discussion for the episode of Janal.
Janal. Well, I mean, where do you want to start, man?
I'll go first this time, since you went first last time.
Thank you. Thank you for curbing my bossy pantsness.
I enjoyed this episode, not all of it, but most of it. And I think it, like I said, I found an episode of Star Trek in there. And I think rewatching this the third time, I thought to myself, you know what, if I, cause I'm an editor by trade, that's what I do for a living. Audio and video editor. And I was thinking I could probably make a great episode of Star Trek out of this if I cut about 20 minutes out. And then I was like, nah, just, you know, I'll just enjoy what it is, because, you know, it's art. It's not my art to chop up. You know, I'm not going to make a mug or a pin out of the Mona Lisa. It's not the Mona Lisa, but you know what I'm saying? I enjoyed so much Wilson Cruz's performance in this of Bix. Which Bix?
Janal.
Janal. Oh, yeah, Janal Bix. That makes sense, right? Yeah,
that's the name of the episode. You want to know, when I was doing the rundown, I was like, oh, which Bix was this? I had the same exact question. I said, I had to look it up, and then it said Janal Bix, and I said, oh.
But I was shocked by Wilson Cruz's performance, because thus far he's been Culber, Dr. Culber. And okay, and, you know, functional, but he's capable of so much more. And I think it really showed in this episode. So that performance is something I really enjoyed.
I'm going to agree with you on that. There was just such an ease to his performance once he became Bix. I like Culber as a character for the most part, but I think he's a little too Mother Hen-ish. Mm. Especially since they got to the 32nd century, they're making him more of everybody's babysitter. And I kind of liked the angry, just resurrected fungal Hugh that didn't know who he was or what he was, and, mm-hmm. you know, had to find himself. And now everything's a little too, you know, it's a little too, maybe, I don't want to say twee. I don't think the character's twee, but at the same time, just a little too caring. Is that a thing? Can you be too caring? That's my problem, Melby. I care too much. My heart's too big. It hurts so bad. No, but I feel like they kind of took those shackles off of Wilson in this episode. He was just able to just breathe, you know, and have some fun. And the character just seemed so much more natural. Like, I think he would want to play Bix more than he won't want to play Culber.
I don't know. More fun, like he was having more fun. That other time, Wilson Cruz, yeah, that was another time he shined, really. That was a little bit not my favorite part of things back then. But in this episode, Wilson nailed it. I really enjoyed it. I liked the adventure of it. I liked the chase. I like the chase in this part, because it wasn't really, they didn't have to make connections that weren't there to move the story forward. For me, I like the references to all the things that happened after the chase, the episode of The Next Generation, finding that little bit of backstory from Janal Bix. I liked going down to Trill. I liked seeing more about Trill. For me, there's a little bit of a missed opportunity. I would have loved to have been a Dax and not a Bix.
I'm of two minds of that.
Okay.
And the fanboy in me wants that to be a Dax, and it would have been amazing if Culber could have channeled Jadzia.
Mm.
That would have been terrific. Or Ezri.
Or Ezri, you know? I like both.
Yeah, but I like both too. I think, though, that the practical side of me would have rebelled at that, saying, of all of the symbionts, is Dax the only one? So I'm kind of glad that we have Tall and Bix, and so far no mention of Dax that I can recall, because it just makes more sense in a big universe.
Yeah, I think probably Dax was probably on the table, but they probably thought better and thought, if we mess this up, people are going to hate us more. So let's not even touch Dax. But if they could have gotten Jadzia or Ezri, you know, back, the actors, you know, for something, would we have, I don't know.
You know, I guess they could have shown them in a mirror. I think that's how Ezri did it when she was channeling her past selves. Mm-hmm. She was looking in a mirror and she would see, it would be a quantum leap moment. Yeah. So you would still have
could
to have
imagine
Culver
seeing Terry Farrell. I know she's older now, and that could have worked somehow, but I don't know how. Maybe
you mean Mrs. Nimoy?
Yes, Mrs. Adam Nimoy.
Yes,
she's Star Trek royalty now. So lovely.
So yeah, I think it would have been nice to have Terry or Nicole back.
Nicole DeVore back. That would have been nice.
Yeah, but again, it's not about that, and I think that would have been distracting. Like, yes. I know that Discovery is trying to be its own thing, and there actually were a lot of story threads that were long-time story threads for Disco that they were able to wrap up here. So there was that opportunity as well.
Let's talk to
and
you
I
about
feel
that.
Like if we had we had, you know, either Jadzia or Ezri on as the character, it would have taken away from Discovery's place. It would have usurped the, you know, Discovery thing, and this is Discovery, it's not DS9. So
yeah, I think if Stranger Worlds did this story, went back to Trill and did Dax, I think they would have did it right, and maybe they're saving that.
That would have been Emony, though, if they were doing Strange New Worlds, because Emony met McCoy, so yeah. It definitely would have been Emony at the gymnastics competition. Yeah, that would have been cool.
Yeah,
I feel like that was Kira got to play that one. That was Nana that got to play Emony.
Love Nana.
Yeah, really.
Can't wait
cool.
till we
really
talk
cool.
about Deep Space Nine coming soon.
Coming soon. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I like the Trill magic. I like the fact that they did. I know I pronounced it wrong. I should have looked or listened to it again, but they call it the Giantara is what I think they called it. That's one of my favorite episodes of DS9, when they go through all the old hosts and they manifest as part. So this is right in the wheelhouse. I love the fact that they had Culber and that it was an established thing. It's as established as someone doing a mind meld. So to me, that's terrific. Unfortunately, I think one of the things that you liked that I didn't, and this is not just the Trill part of it, but it's the relationships part of this episode. Mm-hmm. We had dual relationships highlighted here. Mm-hmm. The one between Adira and Gray, and the one between Saru and Tarina. And two more boring, uninteresting relationships you will not find this side of the Delta Quadrant. I mean, I am so non-invested in these characters or their relationships. I just find it tedious, especially Adira and Gray. I don't think they have any chemistry at all. And on top of it all, I'm just going to say it now so I can get out of the way. The actor that plays Gray is terrible. I mean, just terrible. They wrote him off the show for a reason, in my opinion.
I would agree. And that's one of the reasons I never thought Gray was good for Adira, because I just don't like the actor who plays Gray's performance. And I just don't think they're right for each other. But that being said, I did like them breaking up, which I was surprised about, because it gives maybe a new future and story for Adira. They can move on and grow up with their life. And they're both young. Of course, Gray's a robot now. Right. So that's another thing that we don't have to do.
Oh, that's right. Gray's like a Picard 9.0, right?
Yeah, because
Picard is Picard 2.0.
And now they're a robot. So,
Yeah, he's a robot with a symbiont.
Yeah, he's a robot.
How does that work?
It's a robot symbiont, obviously.
I mean, Tal. Do you think Tal has like got a raw deal here? Like, do you think Tal is like what I keep wanting to curse.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I didn't like them together, really. They have moments during Disco that I did enjoy, but there were few and far between. But the breakup scene here, I identified with a lot. Because I've been an unwilling or unknowing participant in those conversations that turned out to be breakup conversations that I had no idea they were going to be. And I felt that Adira played that well, they just, it seemed real to me, and I identified with that because there's been many times where, you know, we were having a conversation and I found out that I was being dumped, and then you have to act like, oh yeah, I agree. I thought, yeah, mutual. Sure. Of course. But that's, I felt that, and I felt that was very realistic. And I've been on both sides of that conversation of the Jedi mind trick, Bugs Bunnying breakup, like trying to make it seem like it's your idea.
So gaslighting, basically. Yes, but I don't think that there was any gaslighting going on here.
I just found it real.
Okay. I mean, we had Jet Reno return.
Yay! Excited for Jet.
Yeah, we love Tig.
Love Tig.
Tig's always a breath of fresh air when she comes always on screen. But unfortunately, a lot of her stuff was just to lament this poor kid's fate because she saw it coming, and to yell at Stamets for not being a good space dad and protecting her from it or whatever. I'm trying again. We've had this conversation a couple of times now on the show. Who are they writing this show for? And it seems like they're trying to go for a bunch of different demographics. Maybe they're trying to rope in people who are going to be watching the Starfleet Academy show that premieres sometime in 2026 or whatever. But I'm
dreading
this
that
is
already.
It's just like CW level teen angst nonsense to me. And I just, maybe not quite CW level, not yet. They don't have the time for that kind of nonsense, but it's just not interesting to me. But again, I'm the curmudgeon. I'm like the Rainer in the scenario. Like I'm not interested, and I'm going to tell you I'm not interested, and I'm going to go about my day and not care that you might be hurt that I'm not interested. But this to me is just the least of it. I mean, we go to Trill. I knew that we were going to have a reunion of these characters. Mm-hmm. I think it's the greatest thing ever that they broke up so that we don't have to see Gray again.
Yeah, I don't want to see Gray again. I think the only acting I believe less than Sinequa is Gray. who plays Gray?
I can never remember his name.
Is it on there? It's on the show.
We didn't put it on the sheet. You have to look that up.
You're a guest star, so he was a guest star.
So. Yeah, yeah. So,
but it just takes me out of it every time.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're earnest, and he tries, but I just don't. I don't buy the performance ever. But I guess this also gives closure. Like you said, it can set Adira up for something new, something different, maybe make Adira interesting in some way, and put aside that baggage, because that was if you recall the last episode we did, that was my criticism, was that Adira is still nothing but like season one Tilly, but worse, just all awkwardness and, you know, maybe competent, but they can't get out of their own way. And that gets tedious to me after a while. So maybe this is a stepping stone towards seeing an arc for the character finally that transcends that, maybe.
And with Gray, I always felt like I didn't like Gray. I think it was the performance of the actor, but him breaking up with Adira, I think gave me like a reason that like it validated my dislike for the character. Like there's something shady going on with that, with Gray on Trill. He's already dating someone else or something.
All right. I mean, you bring to it your projections. I bring to it my projections. It seemed like, you know, just a natural breakup between two young people. It's fun. Well, it was a little bit neat, you know, it was a little bit clinical, but
Like I said, it was real to me, and it was the first time I saw whatever that I saw in that was real. It was the first time I saw that I can recall in watching all of television. It wasn't overdone. It was just what it was, but it was very real. So Trill, they're on Trill. It gave me like DS9 feels and member berries. I think they did that part pretty right.
Yeah, there are some aspects of that, and it goes back to Gray, but it's at the end of the episode that rubbed me the wrong way a little bit, but another part too. But I like that they're back in the caves. They kept it consistent with what they did the first time too, when they joined Gray back to, I want to say Dax. I always want to say Dax, but back to Tal.
Pix? Jal? Tal?
Tal, yeah, Tal. because Adira was carrying Tal because Gray had died.
That's right.
Right, and then once they resurrected Gray, I guess now he's Gray Tal. Yeah, so Robit with a symbiote. So they're keeping their own continuity. We didn't have to go into that weird headspace dimension where they did that first time when they were talking to all of the symbionts, if you recall. Mm-hmm. Every version that the symbiont, every host, I should say all the hosts, not all the symbionts.
Right.
I did watch the episode
again. That was good.
I did like that. But here's the thing is they could have established that. Then you could have seen Janal, the real Janal. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad they didn't go with what Disco has already established as maybe being in a liminal headspace. They needed somebody out there, you know, showing them where to go. So enter Culber. Mm-hmm. So what do you think of Michael bringing Book on this mission?
I like seeing Book. I like seeing David. I think there's a trust there that she hasn't really established with the new first officer yet. And Michael knows that Book has her back no matter what. And if something's going to happen, it's good to have him there. So I think it made sense in my brain. And I'm glad that that Book was down with her, because that made that Star Trek part of the episode more enjoyable and adventurous, I think.
All right. And I always think that it's just because show.
Yeah, because that's another reason.
She gives, for many plot convenient reasons, especially in this one, the fact that Book was there, it wouldn't have worked without any other character. Mm-hmm. The resolution of the episode. But Michael is just like, I don't know if I want to bring you. I'll take it under advisement. You're still in trouble. You're still persona non grata. I don't know that you should be on this mission. And then 4 seconds later, she's like, okay, I've decided to bring you. Why? Because he's your boyfriend. That's why, you know, and also we're going to need him for plot reasons later. Mm-hmm. So
I had totally forgot that Book had that power of his forehead to communicate with bugs.
Yeah. Especially I can't. So I don't know. This might be where we might differentiate. So tell me, you've been talking about it since the top of the show. What specific bits of this stuck out to you as Star Trek that you point to and say that's Star Trek?
I would say the Trill part. Not the Trill in the caves and the worms and the ceremony, but more of like the Trill. We're seeing a different symbiont in Culber, Wilson Cruz, and that different persona taking over a character that we know already. That's a very Star Trek thing that happens a lot often, I think. We've seen that before. And I like the adventure of that, and I like the little bit of the morality test in it. Even though Janal gives them lets them know, oh, now we're in danger, get your phasers out, which was a little bit of a mislead, because he wanted to get them on the offensive when the real test was being, just because they're cloaked bugs that look like, the alien from Darmok doesn't mean they're all bad. So I like that a little bit, and I like the adventure and the figuring out of that the aliens, the bugs weren't like necessarily the bad guy. I think I wrote down The Devil in the Dark, you know, it's that whole example. Like, we think it's a bad, evil alien, but it turns out it's just protecting its eggs.
Yeah, right down to the eggs, right?
Yeah. And then, of course, the Darmok camouflage, the predator camouflage kind of thing going on. And just that part, the middle part, I really thought was a good episode of Star Trek.
Now, that's funny, because to me, that was the dumb action part. Like, we need invisible trill bugs to fight to get to this place. And I
think it could have been. And I think what saved it, like is what I said in the beginning, was Wilson Crew's performance of Janal. I think no matter what silly like tropes or action or unnecessary action even that was going on during the episode, and again, the Brewster's Millions visual effects budget, I think Wilson Crew's performance in the episode really just tied it together and gave it what it would have otherwise been missing. So that's why I enjoyed the whole thing as a whole, I think.
All right. I mean, to me, the fighting the bugs part was almost no different than the running from drones part in the last episode. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just another set piece obstacle that they had to get through to get to the next piece of the puzzle, the next piece of tech. So I was kind of just bored by that, even though it was visually spectacular and it was supposed to be exciting. I wasn't excited so much as just waiting to get through that part. But that being said, what annoyed me even more, and I knew it was coming, and it just seemed so hack, that was the test all along, that you saw them as not monsters, but it's just like, shut up, stop it. I knew you were going to do that nonsense, you know?
So you were ahead of the story this time.
I think so, yeah. And I said, I hope they don't do that. I hope it's a real danger. I hope that it wasn't, that was the test all along. And no, it was the test all along. Oh, by the way, here's the thing, under a random rock that would never have fallen down in 800 years, you know, being so buried so deep and so expertly away from the elements. You just, whoop, there it is, right under a rock.
Well, he blew the dust off.
I guess I hit it so well. And so, it was a red herring.
I like the red herring discussion, because I never understood about red herrings. I didn't know herrings weren't red. I just assumed they were. I'm not a fish guy. I'm not a fishmonger. So I don't know these things. What color are herrings?
All fish to me are like bluish gray. So Okay. Maybe brown with spots. But yeah, they do have red fish. I've eaten red fish. So I'm sure they're red fish that we can eat. One tropical fish, are probably red, like red Grammys, fish, blue Grammys, right? Mm-hmm. So Dr. Seuss said it. Right?
Yep, exactly.
But yeah, I mean,
and it wasn't really a red herring. It was more of just a mislead. So I guess it was in a way, but not in a mystery, but not of a whodunit. Doesn't it have to be a whodunit to be a red herring? I don't know.
Maybe no. Anything that's misleading is a red herring. You know?
Why? Do we know why? You know,
why is anything that we don't understand called a thing?
Star Trek, the motion picture?
Yes. It's just the noun, Bones. It's just the way we talk.
Yeah, just English.
Yeah. I'm glad that you found something of value in that. I'm glad that someone somewhere enjoyed that bit of the story.
Another thing I enjoyed about it, which gave me the feels of, again, maybe Jellicoe, but I'm also thinking like some story that involved Riker that I can't quite put my finger on, to where it might have been with maybe Pegasus. I don't know, where something's going on and we quite don't understand what's going on. But at the end, like we find out that the first officer, what's his name again? The guy you like?
Jellicoe? Oh, the new guy.
Yeah.
Rayner.
So I think Rayner actually finding out and being interested in the people, and we feel like he's just doing it because he was told to do it, but he actually like is understanding them better by the getting this quick summary or the one story to know them. I kind of enjoyed that like turn at the end. Like, I didn't see that coming, which I should have. I should have, honestly. But I didn't. So I enjoyed that part. It seemed very, maybe, fifth season Next Gen moments.
to me. All right. I have problems with that part, but there's just one part also. Can we just stick with the bug thing for a second?
Sure, sure, sure.
What if Book didn't have the power to communicate telepathically with animals? What if Book wasn't like Aquaman and couldn't talk to the bugs? Would then Bix have just let them die?
Yes.
Yeah, he said that, yeah. But here's the thing. Without Book's superpower, there would have been no way for them to really communicate their intentions to the bugs. Do you think the bugs would have been cognizant enough to notice that there wasn't a phaser without Bix, without Book saying, "We come in peace, and now you can somehow read their minds because they're receptive to what you're saying because they don't see a phaser"? Like, that to me, again, was just nonsense, quite frankly. Had it been Saru and Michael down there, would Saru have done like a bovine dance to get them to understand? Like,
you think that's why Dr. Kovic sent Book with them? Because maybe he knows more about the puzzle they have to go through than he's letting on.
Wow, you're giving the show a lot more credit than I am. Sure.
I'm trying to find the good. It gives me
a reason, and I'm good with that. So thank you. I'll say thank you.
I'm calling
shenanigans on that one.
Michael showing her hands without a phaser in them, even though she's still got a phaser because all she's got to do is think phaser and it's in her hand.
Right. She doesn't have to snap. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like if that was like, say, Kirk era and Kirk was doing that, like, look, I'm coming in peace. I'm putting myself out there. Can we talk about this? You know, I buy it a little bit.
I mean, I guess you could say that they're also, though, sorry, but as much as it's like one of the greatest episodes of Trek of all time, Devil in the Dark never would have worked without a mind meld.
Correct.
So that was convenient for a story purpose as well. Holy crap. I've never really considered that. So I might be taking Discovery to task for something that TOS has already done. But the mind meld is just so iconic. And the fact that Spock is able to communicate using that power is fascinating, no pun intended, in that context. But to me, it's hacky in this context.
And now,
this is a Chris problem. I just realized that this is a Chris problem.
Well, you've now broke the episode a little bit for me, because what I liked about it was that it had the feeling of a Trek episode, but now I'm realizing that it might lead more to the AI copying an old episode of Star Trek and filling in and changing the names, because instead of Spock mind melding, Book can communicate with bugs and slugs.
Yeah, yeah, and we have the eggs. Were they made out of silicone?
Man, the AI again got us.
And I completely forgot, because I haven't seen Darmok in a million years. I forgot that they had the Predator-style monster on that planet. All they needed was a Mugatu, and we would have been in business.
Yeah, we find out more about Mugatu in Lower Decks. That's
funny. So I'm sorry, I kind of interrupted your train of thought with Captain Rayner, or Commander Rayner now.
I like that story arc. I like that Tilly told him what to go do with himself, and she was kind of admonished for not giving the permission to speak freely before, but in this episode she just said what she thought and she didn't care. And I like that. And I like that relationship that they're building. I think if Discovery was to go on and again, I'm Rayner. If Rayner was going to stay with the crew and it would go further, that little relationship, the friendliness, and also the adversarial nature of their Tilly and Rayner together, I'm starting to like that.
Okay. I mean, I guess that's pretty cool to come away with that. I'm of two minds, again, of the Rayner thing, and I feel like it gets back to the root of the problem that I had with Rayner in the last episode. Coming in, solving the problem sort of by undercutting the existing characters who probably deserve more after five seasons. In this case, I've said it multiple times. I'll say it every time I'm on the show. I don't even know the names of the bridge crew on Disco. Mm-hmm. And instead of Rainer really getting to know them so that we can get to know them, we have these, you have 20 words and we have one sentence about each character, and then they go away. And then Rainer somehow magically knows everything about them and who they are and what they find most important in the world. I guess that's good for him. I wish I knew. I wish I was invested in those characters as he was after 20 words. I can't manage to do it after five seasons.
Chris, that was 113 words.
Oh, okay. I'm gone. I'm leaving.
Oh, I think that whole 20 word thing was just to set up the joke about calling Rainer.
So, yeah,
but it worked for me. I enjoyed that part. I enjoyed Tilly's 20 word haiku.
All right. I thought that she was going to call him an asshole, but.
Oh, see, yeah, I went with. But,
right. They're all in the same region.
One thing that I really liked and I was disappointed was we got more interesting characters in those 20 lines from those five or so people that Rainer was interviewing than we got for like the main cast of the show. Like, I want to see a show about those people. I want to see the shiphead. You know, I want to see more of Tig. You know, I want to see the other people that they interviewed, the one that plays Monopoly and is great at board games. I want to see an episode all about them. I want to see a Lower Decks episode, not the animated show, like the Lower Decks original Star Trek Next Generation, of course, without the death, but just about them, because they seemed interesting and real. They seemed like real to me, that more real than a lot of the main cast. So I think it's a missed opportunity. So I think it's possible to make good characters in Discovery. I think almost like they were like, okay, you wrote these characters good, but so we're only going to have 20 lines of them because we don't want people to realize we can do that. You know, don't let them know we can do it.
Yeah. See, I don't know if I'd go with that, because you think that they're interesting because they're different from the characters, you know, but
maybe
now with the problem that you have with the writing on this show, could it be that once they started to try to flesh those characters out, you would become just as disenchanted, you know, maybe. Because they don't, you know, all they have to do is give you a hint of something interesting and then have Rainer expound upon it like Sherlock Holmes, just completely circumstantially, and thinking that he knows who they are. And
you okay, put your finger on it.
So which was what?
Sherlock. The TV show Sherlock and Sherlock Holmes more in general, but specifically Sherlock. I think that's where I was getting what Rainer did, where he knew more about them than they said. So, yeah.
You know, and here's the thing. I love Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes stories. I have many volumes, many copies. I've read quite a few of it. I think most of them. Mm-hmm. And I love the character, but it struck me from story one that Holmes is not a good police. He happens to be right, but everything that Holmes does is based on personal observation and circumstantial evidence. And it just happens to pan out in the end, but no police force would act like that. So it's like in modern times, you look at a character like that and say, well, no, the observer effect and just the fact that you don't really know who these people are. You just see a speck of mud on their boots and think that they were in this region of Tuscany 30 years ago or something. Well, there's no proof there. That's just your idea. And I feel like Rainer is doing the same thing here. So again, as maybe I'm backing up again, saying maybe this is a Chris problem. It strikes things in stories I like that kind of annoy me already. And this is a character I like who is potentially, you know, a really great character for the season who is intentionally annoying. But now I'm finding stuff that he's doing is pressing one of my buttons. So I'm like, don't do that. So I don't know.
And you're right. Whereas I was just watching the episode, assuming what Rainer said was true about these characters. She could have it totally wrong.
Yeah. He could just be like, well, this is what, until he could have said, no, I mean, you only gave the guy 20 words. He hates ships. You know, he loves ships so much. He's a shiphead. He's going to be a captain one day if he wants to. Why? Because he just said that he liked Disco and its lines. I mean, What? I mean, I like the way a Thunderbird looks, but I don't know anything about cars. So I don't know.
So what do you think about Anthony Rapp being given more than 20 lines and what he said and what he's excited about this technology? Do you think it's going to lead somewhere? Like, they're giving us clues to where the story's going, maybe?
I have to think that they're teeing it up for that. I think I get lost, and maybe I'd like to get your feelings on this, because we discussed it a little bit in episode one, but the whole Stamets looking for a legacy thing doesn't really interest me that much. And I don't know why that's going to be the arc for the character as they're going out. I guess maybe they're thinking in terms of finality. So if we're going to be leaving these characters for good, you want to set them up for how they'll be remembered by posterity. And I feel like they're telegraphing that so much with the Stamets character this season. It's a byproduct of season five. But I say that, but they didn't know they were going to end until they were done almost with the principal photography. So I'm going to fall back. This is a Chris problem. I'm Holmes. I'm Rayner. I'm making assumptions.
They did do reshoots when they found out it was the final season.
Do you think they reshot some of this stuff?
I don't know what they reshot. It'd be interesting to find out. I don't think I'll buy the Blu-rays. That's the one series I might not have on Blu-ray, but or DVD. Do you think they're setting up Stamets to be, you know, to sacrifice himself at the end of the season?
I didn't go there.
That's where I went with it.
All right, talk to me. What do you mean by that?
Well, he wants to be remembered, right, in the future, and he wants a legacy. He wants to do something with his life, and he feels up until this point he really hasn't. That's what the vibe I was getting, and that he really needs to pay his rent.
You and that rent. But where does that dovetail into him sacrificing himself somehow?
Well, he did mention about the technology and it, like, missing some things because of the half-life, and then the technology could possibly resurrect the dead. Now, I think that's another issue totally, and when he mentioned that.
Okay, yeah, much bigger conversation there.
I thought maybe they were basically, what they're going to do is use that as the tribble in the Star Trek 2009 thing, where they say, okay, this is how we bring somebody back from the dead. Now forget about it. And then later on, somebody's going to die. And then I'm going to use this technology to resurrect whoever died. So I think that's telegraphing one of the final episodes of the season.
You think it'd be like Gage Creed from Pet Sematary?
Possibly.
He'll come back and kill Fred Gwynn.
Yeah, Fred Gwynn, Herman Munster. That's the best.
Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yep. Sometimes dead is better.
So, do you think they're setting him up to sacrifice himself, or on the different note about the resurrecting the dead? Because are they talking about, like, I know we got Kirk's remains and we got Archer's remains. At least we did in the 24th century.
We're not going to see Kirk or Archer. I mean, okay. Well, we've already had Culber resurrected from the dead.
Yeah. But wasn't that just with like the poltergeist? He came through the TV or something. All slimy.
He was magic spore Culber, magic fungus Culber. Right. We got Robot Gray, magic spore Culber. I mean,
is anybody who they were?
Haven't we done this like a few times on Disco already?
Yeah. Well, who would die? Who would we? That would be sad if like they killed off somebody we didn't care about at all, and be like, oh, okay.
They'll kill Tilly.
Tilly? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, she's good. That's why they called her Tilly. She's in Starfleet.
Yeah, Academy. So that's what I mean. So that's what I'm saying. They'll kill Tilly, and it will be anticlimactic because we know that Mary is off shooting.
They would do that, wouldn't they?
Right. And here's the thing. I think I saw like headlines for an article. It might have been on Trek Movie or whatever, but it was like Mary Wiseman doesn't want to talk about her Starfleet Academy show spinoff. And maybe she doesn't want to because Tilly dies, and she doesn't want to remind everybody that Tilly is going to be very much alive after the show wraps. So,
yeah,
all conjecture on my part. I completely, quite frankly, Albie, I completely forgot about that aspect of the episode. So you brought it up right now, but it is very interesting that they would go there and talk about creating life and resurrecting the dead. And I wonder if they're setting it up, since everything seems to be magic in that future, as like maybe a true singularity where life as we know it changes in ways that we can't comprehend. And that's where we leave off with Disco, kind of like Decker and Aaliyah at the end of the motion picture. Maybe they're setting it up so that the entire you hear that? Decker. Not Decker Unit, Decker. Maybe they're going for that grand finale, like making it really like transcending and the human adventures just beginning kind of deal.
Maybe that's when the humans turn into the Q continuum, when they discover the progenitors technology.
And they meet William Campbell and John Delancey on the other side, Trelane and Q. And
I'm distantly related to William Campbell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The late William Campbell.
I want to say a cousin to my half-sister or something. I don't know.
Was this Spaceballs?
No, this is true. Not my cousin's roommates. Former. No.
Yeah. What does that make you?
Nothing.
Come on, finish it. There we go. I mean, I loved William Campbell's performance as Trelane and as Koloth so much that I tried to find other William Campbell movies, and it's like only one. And it wasn't that great, you know. But I'm glad that we have the William Campbell connection on the show. See if you can get him on.
I think he's dead.
Oh, he's way dead.
Yeah, way dead. But I'll try. You know, you never know. We've gotten some people before, so where do you think they're going with that storyline?
I which one? The human adventures.
The Paul Stamets.
I don't know. I think,
why does he want to be remembered? What's he going to do to be remembered?
I think that he's the one that's going to crack the progenitor code and usher in the revolution, usher in the singularity. Why else would they have him being able to, you know, go through that Romulan tricorder data? Like, why wouldn't Zora have realized about Half-Life? Why wouldn't an AI have made such a leap? Data would have figured it out in 4 seconds.
Absolutely.
And for an android, 4 seconds is a very, very long time indeed.
Very long time. Almost an eternity.
I mean, what was the actual unit in First Contact?
Like 0.07 seconds or something.
Yeah, right. what do you think? I mean, why do you think they're setting this up?
I'm struggling because I want to know, but I think I'm missing the whole point of the season. Because I think, what did Tilly mention in this episode or at one point? Or like, then we find what created us? Is that what we're doing now? So she said something like that.
Yeah, it's the old Roddenberry trope. Let's go find God.
Yeah. I'm not excited for that. I'm not excited for the conclusion of that. Like, what could they do there that could be worth all this puzzle building?
Well, you know what? We'll finally hear from God what he needs with a starship. That's where we're going.
Excuse me. What does God need with a starship? All right. I'm going to check my notes.
We never talked about, because we got so sidetracked with,
talk to me.
Dumb trill bug action. What do you think about this whole Saru, Tarina Mishigash?
I think it's interesting that they added in the wrinkle of her Vulcan assistant. What was his name? Mr. Duvin? Something
sure.
Like that? Yeah. I thought that was interesting, and it was like to add intrigue, and maybe like it gave me vibes of Sarek when he had the, what was it, Bendai syndrome or something? Where he needed somebody to watch over him and like was like overprotective. They were overprotective of him, his aides. So I think there's something of that going on, but also like there might be something surreptitious that her aide is trying to accomplish without her knowing it. I don't know. Like, I'm interested in that part.
And I, what, again, I find their relationship and the portrayal of their relationship and the time we spend on their relationship less than compelling. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it's a chore to get through those scenes, but I'm like, okay, I guess we're developing the story. I'll get through it. What I liked about the resolution of that is that I feel like Saru came to a conclusion that many people in long-term relationships, guys, I mean, come to, where you don't need to handle everything. You don't need to rescue your partner all the time and make everything better. And she basically, you know, just slapped them down on that.
I did like that.
She said, yeah, I wasn't aware of any time I ever mm-hmm. told you that I needed your assistance in conducting myself and your mm-hmm. protection and stuff like that. And it's just like, oh, snap. I did like that aspect of it because it's a message that I think a lot of guys, and I'm guilty of it. You just want to go in and run everything and fix mm-hmm. everything and make sure that everybody's okay. And it doesn't work that way. You just got to support the person you're with, stand by them. And mm-hmm. Saru comes to that conclusion at the end. Mm-hmm. So it was one of the few times in Disco that they telegraphed, pivoted their message, because the show has a habit of doing it in the beginning and the end with the UC Timmy moments. I'm sorry, I'm stealing off a mission log. I don't mean to do that. But I find it cloying a lot of the times. In this case, I found it refreshing, and maybe because I recognized it, maybe because it resonated with me.
Yeah, as a male growing up at this time, I feel like I want to be a problem solver in the relationship. I want to be the caretaker in the relationship. I want to be the protector, and I don't mm-hmm. know if that's instinctual or societal, but I you know, subconsciously feel like that's my only value, is to solve problems and to take care of others. So I could see Saru having that, and I could see her saying, no, I don't need that. And I did enjoy that part. But the relationship as a whole has been very boring to me. I mean, we're contrasting that versus like season one, Stranger Worlds with Spock and what is it? T'Pel?
T'Pring.
And,
T'Pol.
Yeah. It's like T'Pol, but different.
Oh, I'm thinking T'Pau. No, it is T'Pring. It is T'Pring. Okay. I was thinking T'Pau is thee and thou in Amok Time. Mm-hmm.
So
T'Pring is the girlfriend.
Like that relationship is hot, sexy, romantic, flirty, even though they're Vulcans. You know, they still mm-hmm. have that romantic connection there. And they're doing something. And like, I feel no romance here, at least in season five. Season four, I did feel a little bit of it between them in their scenes. Like, I felt like the aw and a little bit of the joy for them finding each other. But there's nothing that happened this season yet that made me excited about this part of the story.
And maybe because both characters are so subdued. I mean, Saru is Mr. Kind and Gentle, not kinder, gentler. And that was supposed to be as a backstop or juxtaposition against Michael, who could be hot-headed. And then you have, I guess, this Navarre chancellor, president, whoever she is. Is she ambassador? What does she do? I know that she's the head of the now Vulcan Romulan planet that's called Navarre. So, like,
she's somebody.
Yeah. But the thing is, she's just as staid and measured because she's a Vulcan. Mm-hmm. So she plays a Vulcan very well. I have say, of all the Vulcan portrayals that I've seen on Star Trek, I have a hard time with anybody except Nimoy mm-hmm. getting it right. Like, I don't think that Vulcans are ever done right after Nimoy. They don't understand the essence of what makes a Vulcan a Vulcan. I feel like she approaches it because
I can't wait till you meet later seasons Tuvok.
I Tuvok is one of the ones that I point to and say wrong. So we'll go to it.
Yeah,
you know,
I think he's much different after he spends a long time with Tank Girl, but that's a different episode.
All right. I mean, yeah. So we'll, I would, I look forward to one of the few things I look forward to in the monumental task ahead of us of watching all of Voyager is to see if I will get to like Tuvok.
Because all right. We'll see.
Yeah.
That might be the question of the episode. Do you like Tuvok yet? we'll have a definite decision by the time we get to Tuvix.
Oh, my Tuvix is.
Don't get me started on Tuvix.
Legendary happened. With Tuvix.
It never happened.
I've never even seen the episode and I have opinions.
Really? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Wait till you get there.
So
Rennie cried. She cried.
Because Janeway's a monster.
Yeah, but only in that episode. So I it never happened. Anyway.
Anyway.
Foreshadowing. what else you got written down about this episode? Talk to me about stuff. Bring things up. I want to know. I want to.
I mean, I went over most of my big things. Thank you again for bringing up the whole thing of this technology being able to resurrect life and stuff like that. Do you see this as a softening of Rayner? Do you see this as him opening up a little bit more and becoming more likable, or do you think that that was just something that he decided to share with Tilly?
I think yes, but only with Tilly. And I think we're only going to see that with Tilly. I think he's still, butthurt that he got demoted and he wanted to be still in Starfleet. So he took the demotion instead of getting fired. But I think we're going to see that relationship with Tilly. I think we're still going to see two different Rayners, one with the rest of the crew and one with Tilly. And, I'm looking forward to the Tilly Rayner relationship, which I never thought I'd say, but I'm looking forward to that. I might end up coming around and liking him in the end. Like, you know, they're doing the whole Shaw thing. I think I've seen that online. Like they're doing Shaw again, you know, in this season, right after the last season of Picard. You know, they're doing the same thing, taking somebody that you're obviously not supposed to like and then turning him to where you like him. So, but I'm here for it. I'll watch it.
All right. And maybe if they need a noble sacrifice, maybe he's the one that goes so that they can keep all of our disco family alive and well and that going on adventures.
You might have put your finger on it. Yeah. But then they wouldn't bring him back. So maybe Stamets has to choose one person to bring back and it's not him.
Maybe. All right.
That's
the
question I had that came up on online when I was reading about this episode was, or this season, Rayner has 30 years of Starfleet experience. Wasn't it last season that there was just like one guy on a Starfleet outpost? And like, that was all that was left of the whole Federation was just one dude. That was a generation.
No, I mean, that was all that showed to the outside world. And that's, I mean, it'd be interesting to explore those quote 30 years because with everything that was going on when they first zapped into the 31st century, there was still a Starfleet. It was just well hidden because it was so decimated. So I find it plausible. I mean, they had those ships when they did find them. They did have a fleet of some sort. So they had to be doing something. They weren't just sitting there at that space dock. So,
but they couldn't warp, right? So they were pretty much stuck in a very small part of the galaxy.
Right. So, and that's why he even said, you know, if I had a pathway drive, it'd be different, but I'm stuck with burn technology here. So they don't even have the lithium from what I can tell, or maybe their warp is, I don't know. I really don't know. It'd be interesting if they went into it, but maybe it wouldn't. You know, there'll be the Rayner book.
I just thought about that, but I was like, I will never read a Discovery book. I tried to read a couple of them when they first came out.
Really?
Yeah. I just couldn't. I don't know what it is. What the hell is it? Why? I want to like it. I want to enjoy it. I enjoyed about this episode was the whole on three discussion. Like 1, 2, 3. Is it 1, 2, 3 go or 1, 2, 3? That's a thing we struggle with today. Everybody has a different idea. Do you go on three or 1, 2, 3 go? And I thought it was fun to see that they haven't resolved that yet so far in the future. One of the things we'll struggle with forever.
There you go. So, I mean, yeah, if that's the level of where we're at, I think maybe it's time. Maybe we start wrapping up a little bit.
I would agree.
I, I can tell you one thing that kind of annoyed me, and again, it's because of my disdain for the character of Gray. But did we need a 35 minute soliloquy at the end of the episode with Gray explaining to the Trill Masters what it is to be a symbiont and like the whole meaning of society? Isn't he there to learn that instead of to tell them that? I
think they just wanted to give the character of Gray as much as they could, being it was their going away episode.
Yeah,
kind of like I agree. Final Mission. With Wesley almost.
But except Final Mission, I thought was good.
Yeah, it was done better, yeah. The other thing about Trill was, what was the Trill leader's name? Like something 11 or XI? The one that gave him the riddle at the beginning on the bridge, the hologram?
Yeah, Z, yeah. I think was his name, yeah.
In the beginning of the episode, it's like, oh, I don't know anything else. From now on your own. You have to figure this out all by yourself. And then they beam down to the Trill cave, and he's like, hey, how you doing? I thought that was weird.
He was there. He was there. But you're on your own. Like, I don't know. What he was saying is, I don't know anything. I just know I was supposed to get this answer.
I just got the impression that he was like the gatekeeper. And after that, you know, they were on their own. And then he's just there. So
who was the
key
master?
You think about Maul being hidden among the rest of the cave?
That was my last point. I mean, they were talking, going on and on about how Trill security forces could handle anything. And we got it covered and all this. Now, where else would a stranger stick out more apparently than in such an enclave of acolytes and what amounts to on Trill a secret society, you know? And I really think that was a real boner. Like no one is going to recognize this absolute stranger that is just walking among them. I mean, you're in those caves 24/7 doing nothing but like stirring the ponds and feeding the goldfish. And the only thing you can see are stalactites and the same 9 people. So this one is not going to, just the smell alone, I think would, anyway. Yeah, I thought that was dumb. In case you hadn't gathered. How about you?
The only plausibility that I got from that is Maul was there, yes, as one of the Trill, but it was while the Starfleet personnel were visiting. So like it wasn't like, who's this in my living room? It's like there's 15 people in my living room. Who knows if it's 14, 15, or 16. So I kind of thought that maybe she could get away with it. But I did find it strange. One thing that bothered me about this episode, I'm sorry. Another thing was they had so many good music cues. So many good music cues from other eras, let's say a Star Trek, maybe that made me reminiscent of different things in Star Trek, but they were completely unearned. So when I heard them, I was like, how dare you? How dare you, sir?
I would tell you that I would go back and try to fish those out so I could feel that indignance with you, but I don't think I'm going to go back.
No, I'm not. No,
I'm going to feel the indignance.
I'm only going
right
forward
now.
From now on.
I will tell you this. If there was an episode of Disco this season that I would watch again, so far, this is the most likely candidate.
I would agree.
Although I've seen all of them now, you know, a couple of times, at least because of the for us to watch it. But I found this one to be the most engaging. And I guess maybe we're getting into some final thoughts on that.
Final thoughts. Yeah. Christopher DeFilippis, final thoughts and out of 5 rating on Janal, season 5, episode 3 of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, as I was sort of sliding in there, this seems to me like the season is finding its footing a little bit. The story was a bit more interesting. We had big, dumb, invisible bug action, but we're always going to have some kind of big, dumb action sequence in Disco. So at least this one was in service to a story and characters that, for the most part, I enjoyed. I had problems with it. The relationships portrayed were not the relationships that give me any kind of, you know, joy to sit through. But at least we know one of them is over and never to be spoken of again. And the other one is still evolving, and it ended in a place that I found interesting anyway, even though the journey wasn't especially interesting. So I would say that this is probably the most solid episode of the season so far. And as a result, I'll give it 3.5 woo-woo assholes out of 5.
Okay, we'll take it. We'll take it. I'd say this is the most watchable of the season so far. I would agree with you there. I don't see it as something I'm going to want to go back and watch, but it's something I will if I'm going through. Like, if I have to do a chronological watch through or a complete watch through one more time, then, like, if I force myself to do it, I'll do it. But I won't hate that I had to watch that episode. It wasn't for me nails on a chalkboard like the previous episode or dry popsicle sticks. It was enjoyable in many parts. And I only found myself doing the facepalm a few times during the episode. So that's one of the better ones. And of course, we had Tig Notaro in it. So any episode with Tig Notaro, you know, it makes me happy because she's in it. So I would like to see her and Saru interact more. That would have been good. I was excited for the end where the little replicant bug went into Adira's arm, because I know that now Blue Del Barrio has something to do in the next episode or one of the next episodes. We're going to see them go through something with that, whatever in it. I don't think it's just like a tracking thing or something.
Refresh my memory. Did I miss something?
When Maul was in the caves and they were all hugging and saying goodbye, a little nanite crawled from Maul onto Adira's arm and went in her arm.
Well, I think that it's just a tracking device.
You think so? Yeah. I hope it's something that makes what am I trying to think of? Remember Geordi in Generations?
Remember Barry's? Yeah.
Mercurian? How do you say that?
Manchurian candidate.
So I think that's going to reprogram. I'm hoping it's going to reprogram Adira and Blue will have something more to do.
All right. That's good. I thought it was just so that they could solve the riddles and Maul and Locke could just be there at the end to swoop in like Belloc.
Yeah.
And, you know, take it and they can say that belongs in a museum. And they just laugh and go away.
For some reason, when you said Belloc, I thought Belloc in a puppet head. And I was like, how does that apply? But I'm sure you're right. There's only so many sounds in the English language.
And now I'm thinking of little Clint Howard. Yes.
Who's been in every incarnation, I think, of Star Trek.
Yes, he has. Buttons and bows.
So I think it made me excited to find out where it was going. So that I think that was a good music cue, that ominous music cue, in case you missed the little robot bug crawling into...
Yeah, I did. I must have gotten a text or something at that moment.
So, but that it made me intrigued because as we record this, I think in about an hour and a half, the next episode of Disco drops. So we'll be talking about that in a few days to a week. What's that about, Christopher? Can you tell me?
Oh, the next episode.
Oh, I didn't get my rating, Disco. Did I?
You never gave your rating.
I'll give you my rating. So my final thoughts is I enjoyed it. There was an episode of Star Trek in there. Wilson Cruz was amazing. Oh, a little tidbit I found out on an interview he did with Will Wheaton. Did you know how he approached the character of Janal?
No.
He was trying to embody Jack Palance in City Slickers.
I'd have to watch City Slickers again. Wow.
Oh, it's one of my favorites. I have it on Laserdisc.
Okay.
But I'm going to give it, I think, my highest rating so far for a Disco episode. 3 Sluggo Colas.
Oh, yes. It was nice to see the Sluggo Cola.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it a solid 3. Yeah. I didn't hate it. I don't hate it.
Another good DS9 callback. So
yeah, exactly. And so, the callback that they mentioned on I can do it. Lower Decks. Oh, speaking of Lower Decks, I got to check and tell before you read the next week's episode. Or do you want to read that first?
Sluggo Cola is my episode crush.
Episode crush. You know what? I was going to go with Tig as soon as I saw Jet Reno. Tig Notaro. Okay. I was going to go there, but I'm hoping she's going to do more. So for this episode, I have to say Wilson Cruz, 100% the portrayal of Janelle. Total crush.
Gotcha.
But awesome. Tig Notaro was really close, but she didn't have enough to do.
Right up there. Right up
so
there. Okay.
Hopefully soon. Hopefully we get a whole Tig thing going on.
Okay, so you got to do a Trek and Tell, and you got to ask me some trivia questions.
Okay, Trek and Tell. My Trek and Tell is, guess what came in the mail today?
Wow, look at that. Lower Decks.
Season 4 of Lower Decks.
I'm digging how they're doing all their stuff, like the TOS era movie posters.
So we got, let's see, let's start off at the beginning. Season 1. Got on Blu-ray.
Cool.
It was recently announced that Lower Decks, it's their final season so far. Very disappointed about that. But hopefully it gets resurrected. Everybody that's doing it wants to keep doing it, but I'm sure everybody knows by now. But sign the petition. Season 2 of Lower Decks on Blu-ray.
Neato.
Right, so that's good. So the reason I purchased these was, one, to support Lower Decks and let the powers that be know that people actually enjoy the show. I don't know about the numbers and stuff.
Lower Decks season 3. Yep.
The search for Samantha Rutherford.
Right. And for anybody that's listening on the Patreon feed as a podcast, just in your earbuds, Albie is just holding up the season sets and showing the covers. And this is where in season 3 they start aping the TOS movie posters. So that looks like the Search for Spock poster. And then season 4 looks like the Voyage Home.
The Voyage Home. So, and what sold me on these was I was looking at, I think it was Trek and Tell. Not Trek and Tell, Trek a Day. There's a channel on YouTube I follow. He's got a small following, maybe 600 or so right now. But if you look up Trek a Day, there's a person on YouTube, a great guy that I watch open thrift store finds and different Blu-rays and different things, Laserdiscs. He likes Star Trek Laserdiscs. He dresses in Starfleet uniforms. Great. So, of course, I'm going to watch him. But he was showing the new season, I think. And I saw, when I did more research on season 4 of the Blu-ray, there is a Robert Duncan McNeil commentary on the Blu-rays. So as soon as I saw that Robert Duncan McNeil commentary, I was like, buy. And I just said, I should buy all of them.
You're just like, take my money.
Take my money. Take my $100.
So I have a Trek and Tell too.
What is your Trek and Tell?
I showed this at the end of the last episode, but we didn't do Trek and Tell. So
yeah, we'll do Trek and Tell for this one.
I don't even know where I found these, but these are glow in the dark Kirk and Spock's.
They glow in the dark?
They glow in the dark. So I wish I could turn out the light here, but I'd have to get up to do it. But yeah, it's part of, like, this is what I don't know. I don't remember where I found
glow
these.
Glow in the dark, Mr. Spock and Captain Kirk.
So you see, they were attached.
What does it read?
They were attached like this to the thing, right?
So then you take
them off, and I had them on my bedstead. When I was a kid. So when I turned out the lights, they would be flanking either side of my pillow. It's Illuminations, Star Trek, Glow in the Dark, Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock, or Mr. Spock and Captain Kirk. Create a galaxy of adventure on your bedroom wall. Mounts easily. Hanger and self-adhesive squares included, which are in the back here. You can see them, the self-adhesive squares. And it says, a part of the Star Trek Glow in the Dark Universe collection. Now, I don't recall ever having seen anything besides these. Like I said, I don't remember where I found them. They have little taglines. Live long and prosper is what it says under Spock's, and beam me up, Scotty, is what it says under Kirk's. And they have this whole like cool like artwork on the back too.
It looks almost like the size of a record album, I'd say.
No, it's like the size of a big comic.
Oh, okay.
Like a comic book collection here. As a
so does it have a year on it? Because I'm curious about that. I've never seen that in all of my Star Trek.
It's searches. A little bit bigger. So here's like my Plastic Man collection.
Oh, okay.
Over that. So kind of.
What does it have a year on the glow in the dark Kirk and Spock?
Let me take a look.
You know, I have a Cricut, right? I can probably print and cut out every line art drawing of every Star Trek character and make a glow in the dark wall.
Neato. Let me see if there's a year on this thing.
You said when you were a kid, so it has to be what, the 40s?
No. Yeah, the 40s at least. It says trademark 1991, which is impossible because I had this in my bedroom before I was married. I was married in 94. So, maybe. You know,
Ever freak out girlfriends?
I think that says 1981 is 81, what it that's probably there. So that makes sense. I was 11. But I was much older when I got, I was probably got this when I was about 15 or so.
Nice.
Safe, non-toxic, printed on recycled paper. And yeah, the, and the, this, this, it's fascinating to me. This is a shot from my favorite scene, my favorite episode of TOS, Where No Man Has Gone Before. You see Spock in his funky uniform. Mm-hmm. That's Gary right there.
Passed There's, out Gary Mitchell standing.
Yeah, yep, that's Elizabeth Denner right there. Yep. So
Played by
Sally Kellerman.
That's it, Sally Kellerman, yep. She's yep. great in that episode.
Yeah, so she's a walking refrigerator unit. Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of like stuff on here, directions and crap. So yeah, neat track and tell. I'm sorry, I went a little long.
I really like it. That's perfect. I'm very interested in that. Like,
turn off my lights.
It's rare that I've not seen a Star Trek thing, an item.
So there they are.
I really like that, and they glow pretty good.
You know what? You want to let's test it out.
Yeah, test it
out.
Give
me a second.
Sure.
Give me a second. I gotta do one thing.
While he's turning the lights off, I'll vamp a little bit. I'd like to thank our patrons very much, even the free ones. We appreciate you, and we invite you to participate.
I turn the overhead lights off in the library.
All right.
And we're going to hold these up to the ring light just to give them a little bit of juice.
All right. Hold them. Give them the juice. Got to charge them. Got to charge them.
Here we go. Here we go. Hang on.
Whoa.
Yeah. And the thing is, yeah, my computer monitor is like, but you, yeah, they're kind of glowing.
Yeah. So, they have that greenish glow. Yep.
Yeah.
I see.
So if I take them in the back, yeah, like my computer monitor can't really reach back
there. That's the thumbnail. That's the thumbnail right there.
So I'm that's flanked cool. by Kirk and Spock. Yeah.
And they're glow in the dark wall appliques. They're not paper dolls. So get that right.
No, they're plastic. Yeah, they're like
plastic. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Very so. Cool. I like
so
it.
So there we go.
I really like it. Kirk and Spock.
All right. So that's it. That's my Trek and Tell. You got to
That's a good Trek and Tell. That's a good Trek and Tell.
Ask me some questions.
Okay. We have some trivia questions. It's my turn to ask you. In the last episode of Trexploration Disco, you asked me three questions and I got them all right. And then two episodes ago, you got Disco going on over there.
I feel jealous of your background that's always so lighty.
Well, I moved into a space station, not cheap. I'm orbiting the Earth as we speak. Luckily, I got a better internet connection this week. Okay, ready? Let me get another card to block the answers. So
I'm ready.
Number one. Mm-hmm. What cargo ship did Ensign Mayweather grow up on?
Oh, jeez. This was the cargo ship that went to the gangster planet that left the book. Or anyway, they alluded to the fact.
Really?
The gangsters of the 1930s.
What was the name of that ship?
I want to say, I know I'm going to get it wrong.
Take as long as you want. There's no time limit.
I'm going to say the Antares, but I know it's not right.
No, that's where Charlie X was hanging out, I think.
Okay.
It's right on the tip of my tongue, but I don't know it. This is going to ruin our perfect streak unless we can figure it out.
And I love Enterprise so much.
Was the episode name, the episode of the name of the episode of Enterprise, the name of that ship?
I don't think so.
That's probably the problem.
Yeah.
I'm just going to guess the Rutherford. I'm wrong.
Okay.
The Horizon. I did not know
Horizon.
That.
Okay. Horizon. That makes more sense for an earthbound ship.
The Horizon. Okay. Question number two. We both got that wrong. Question number two. In Star Trek, the motion picture, you'll probably get this one. How does Lieutenant Commander Surak die? That I know.
You mean Sonak?
Sonak. Thank you.
Yeah. Transporter malfunction. What we got back didn't live long. Fortunately.
In a transporter accident. Yep. Yes, that's a way to get rid of the guy you cast for the show, right?
Yeah, anyway, pretty much.
Which actor, question number three, Ron, if you're keeping track at home, which actor from the original series won multiple Emmys for playing the same character on two different shows? Which actor from the original series won multiple Emmys for playing the same character on two different shows. I think I know this.
I'm gonna have to say it's Shatner playing Denny Crane on
Denny Crane.
Whatever those shows were. Yeah.
Denny Crane, Boston Public, and he was on something else as Denny Crane, I think.
Right? I thought it was Boston Legal.
Boston Legal. I don't know.
Are they labeled on the back?
Yes. Should I read it? But you're right, I think.
I think Denny Crane.
William Shatner for playing Denny Crane. On The Practice and Boston Legal. The Practice.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever watched The Practice.
I've never watched either.
Which one of those had Jerry Ryan on?
I don't know.
That's a good
point. We'll say Boston Legal so that they could have like the whole Trek crossover.
Yeah. I've seen clips of those episodes, of course, when I'm searching for Jerry Ryan, but I've never seen the full episode. I need to watch those. Cool.
No,
okay, I'm going to just ask you one more question because you got to get three right.
Oh, okay.
So we can still get three right every episode.
Got it. Okay? Got it.
Where is B'Elanna Torres's destination in the Voyager episode Barge of the Dead?
Stovacor. I mean, I don't know.
This says Gray Thor, the Klingon Hell.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, Gray Thor. Feklar's the
Gray Thor. I thought that's where Skeletor lived.
Yeah. Okay, one more, because you got to get three right. What device what device does Dr. McCoy mistakenly leave behind?
His communicator. We already answered this one.
Lodia?
Sigma Iosha. Iosha. They're the Iosians.
Sigma Iosha 2 in the original series episode, A Piece of the Action.
Yeah, his communicator.
Very good. You got three right. Good job.
Gotcha.
How does that come up? We talk about the episode.
It happens almost every time. Every time it's happened.
That's a Matrix thing.
Crazy. I think it was Cameron last time. We were talking about Captain Herriman.
That's too weird.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So let everybody know where they can find us, how they can join our crew, and what benefits they might get being part of
our crew. Yeah. You can find us on patreon.com/trexploration. You can join us at many different levels, and you will get at various levels different bonus content, access to shows and things.
Different things.
I don't have it in front of me, and I don't really have the thing to pull it up. It'll screw up my whole scene. So go to Trexploration, patreon.com/trexploration. You can see all that stuff, our different tiers and the different perks that you get at those tiers. You can also email us and tell us what you think of this episode or other episodes of Disco or any episode of Star Trek at trexplorationpod@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on Instagram at trexplorationpod, on X at Trexploration, and you can find us here on YouTube at youtube.com/@Trexploration. Just remember, any comments that you give us may be used in a future episode of Trexploration. So speaking of future episodes, would you like me to read what's next? Okay, yeah, next on our...
This has been our third episode discussion for season 5 of Disco. So if you want to find out what we think of season 4 in Disco and the rest of the season of Disco, those will be bonus episodes on our Patreon. And you can access those on the lowest level, I think is a cadet,
$5.
Right?
$5.
Cadet. $5. You get the rest of the season $5. And more. Yep.
So, $5.
What is the next episode of Disco? We'll be talking about Christopher DeFilippis.
Face the Strange, Discovery Season 5, Episode 4. On the way to the next clue, the USS Discovery is sabotaged by a mysterious weapon, leaving Captain Burnham. That's a hard thing to say. Captain Burnham, Rayner, and Stamets as the only crew members who can possibly save the ship in time.
Wow. You think that has to do with the little robot bug that entered Adira?
Riveting. No, I think it has to do with the radioactive sand ex machina, Chekhov sand, I call it, from the first, when they did the thing with the avalanche and they stopped the avalanche. They had the dots cleaning off the sand from the hull, and they're saying it has strange magnetic properties. You know that's going to come back at some point.
Yes, maybe that will be the cause or the cure. We don't know yet.
It could
They did mention it. And as we know, they don't mention anything that doesn't come up again. Unless no. It's a goodbye and a hello.
Never. Never.
All right. Well, you know me, Face of the Strange. I enjoy Strange. So
we'll Strange. Yes. All right. Everybody's looking for a little Strange. Isn't that
everybody
true?
Everybody wants a little Strange. You'll we got get about it an hour here and 15 minutes until I get to watch time. It. Isn't it crazy? Isn't it crazy that I'm excited to see the next episode?
Yeah. Well, it's because we make this shit look good.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So.
Face of Strange. Okay. I'm excited. Maybe it'll be fun. We'll see. I think that's it. Final words. Any final words on this episode? The last we'll ever speak about this out loud of this episode between you and me ever.
If I had to discuss it with anybody, I'm glad it was with you.
Aw, same. Like what I mentioned today in our thread was I'm having a rough day, but I'm so glad I just remembered I get to speak with you tonight. So thank you, Christopher, for being my friend.
You're welcome. At that point, this was yesterday. Yesterday.
That's true.
At this point, that was yesterday.
Yeah. It is a little late. I had to run a wire. Space station's weird. I'm still building it. I'm still, you know, it was an empty cargo bay looking thing, and now it's slowly but surely getting there. And the internet connection was one of the things I had to improve upon.
So my light's fading away. Oh no, now it's turning blue. Oh,
that's pretty cool. You got a ring light? That's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's time for us to ring it on out of here. Yes.
All right. So any last words on this one? What are you looking forward to in the next episode? What do you think is going to happen? What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking for Sonequa in braids. What are you looking forward to in the next episode?
I'm hoping we got more Tig, more Linus. And I'm hoping that Blue Del Barrio, Adira, has more to do.
Sounds good.
All right. So until next time, I'm Albie.
And I'm Chris.
Oh, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah.